What do the lives of Americans from more than 200 years ago have to say for how we live today? Author Eric Weiner looked into the life of the most colorful of the founding fathers. He soon learned that Benjamin Franklin's many exploits, experiments, endeavors, and travels can still offer us a lesson in how to live a long and useful life. Eric's written Ben and Me to explore Ben Franklin, warts and all, and to find how his 18th century life can help us feel satisfied with our lives today. Eric's on the line from his hotel in Rome right now, where he's on the way to host a writer's workshop in Bhutan. Eric, you're releasing Ben and Me at a time when interest in Franklin seems to be having a sudden surge. Michael Douglas is starring in an Apple TV series about Ben Franklin. Ken Burns just released a 4-hour profile of Franklin on PBS. And now your book looks at how much Ben Franklin accomplished in his 84 years.
He has aged very well in his afterlife, and in fact, he aged very well during his life. And he really had his best years toward the end of his life. As I like to say, the first two-thirds of his life were amazing, but the last third is when really Franklin became Franklin. Now, that's when he negotiated treaties with France and helped win the Revolutionary War. It's when he signed the U.S. Constitution. So he was extremely active well into his 60s, 70s, and 80s.
There's so much to talk about with Ben Franklin. And first of all, he's a founding father, and that's a big deal in our political discourse lately. In your book, you call Ben Franklin the founder of our times, opposed to the other founders. Is that what you mean?
He was a founding grandfather, I would say, because he did live to such a ripe old age, who established the ideas that still resonate with us today. Laid the groundwork for our democracy and really for the American dream. And you can make the case, and it's a pretty easy case to make, actually, that Ben Franklin was the first person to dream the American dream and to achieve the American dream. Don't forget that he grew up pretty dirt poor in Boston, son of a candle maker, not a lot of money, 2 years of formal education, you know, compared with Jefferson attending law school and that sort of thing. And Franklin was, I think, the most open-minded of the founders. I mean, look, he had his blinders on like everyone else. He was, you know, unable to fully escape the ethics and morals of his times when it came to issues like slavery. But he was really open-minded. He had a scientist temperament, an empirical temper. He was always testing his own ideas. And, you know, he gave this famous speech at age 81, I believe it was, at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, closing remarks. We said, basically, you know, this document, the Constitution, is not perfect, but I don't know if it'll ever be perfect. And I have problems with it. But as I get older, I begin to doubt my convictions more. And so many people, as they get older and older, can be 40 or can be 70, they become more set in their ways and more absolutist. Right. And not Franklin. Not Franklin.
He was like you said, the grandfather. And at the same time, I guess if I wanted to have a beer with one of the founders, I'd want to have a beer with Ben Franklin.
Yeah, you'd probably be a glass of Madeira wine, because he loved Madeira, and he drank about a bottle a day. So he definitely enjoyed life. But he is, you know, more relaxed than the others. He was funnier, definitely funnier.
Funny.
I mean, he was the original humorist of America. So yeah, you'll want to have that glass of Madeira with Ben.
When you think about how funny he is, he had satirical columns, and just his style of writing was clever, wasn't it?
Yes. He wrote these scathing satires. You know, the purpose of satire is to make us laugh, but also to make us think, and he was very good at that. He also would try on these different masks. You know, he would write under pseudonyms, dozens and dozens of them, everything from a middle-aged widow in Boston to the King of Prussia, and he was very adept at that.
I like, and he had, there's proverbs or whatever phrases that we still enjoy today. Fish and visitors stink after 3 days. Classic Franklin.
So true. And he, you know, a lot of these, I'm going to be honest, he borrowed from other places and he Franklinized them. He made them pithier and sharper. And it's the Franklin version of these sayings that we remember today. That's from Poor Richard's Almanac, which he put out once a year under a pseudonym, Richard Saunders, who was not a real person, but was Ben Franklin wearing another mask.
Eric Weiner is introducing us to American founding father Ben Franklin right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Franklin is the subject of his newly released book, Ben and Me, in Search of a Founder's Formula for a Long and Useful Life. Eric's a former correspondent for NPR. And you see his byline at times on online articles for BBC Travel. Eric also hosts writers' workshops in Bhutan. Details are on his website, ericweinerbooks.com. And that's spelled W-E-I-N-E-R. You know, Eric, your book really is not a conventional biography. It's a look at how we can benefit from Ben Franklin's sort of status as the original self-help evangelist, creating a better vision for ourselves. Talk about that for a bit.
Yeah, no, I set out to write a book, as you say, that was not a conventional biography. I described the book as a chronicle of my relationship with Benjamin Franklin. Now, I realize he's been dead for quite a while, but he lives on in his writing, in his words, and in the places that I travel in his footsteps. And he was, I think, the first self-help author in the U.S. He wrote his autobiography, never finished it, but I wrote a good chunk of it. And in it, he lays out basically how he succeeded in life. It's very practical, very American in that sense. And he's like, I started off poor as a candle maker's son, and here's what I did to succeed, and here's what you too, reader, can do. And now, today, Rick, you know, you go into the bookstore, you see all these self-help books that essentially say the same thing. Empower yourself and do this. But Franklin started this genre, and he focused on habits. You know, there are all these best-selling books today about, you know, atomic habits and great habits. Franklin had his 13 habits, 13 virtues that he wanted to adhere to. As a young man, he came up with this list. And he came up with a very systematic way of approaching it. I'm going to focus on one virtue, be it honesty or fortitude or celibacy. He wasn't so good at that.
It's kind of like the Boy Scout one, trustworthy, loyal, friendly, helpful, courteous, kind, brave, clean, and reverent.
Kind of like that, or the ancient Greek virtues. I mean, virtues had been around for a while, but he systematized them. He divided his notebook into sort of a grid pattern, and each week, he would follow a different virtue. And anytime he strayed from that virtue, he would make a mark in his book.
So what's something that you've benefited from his wisdom in your life?
I think his focus on usefulness. I mean, from a young age, he decided he was going to be useful. And look, my father was a doctor, my mother was a school teacher, and I thought, well, you know, they're useful. But I began to question as I approached a big birthday that features the number 6, have I been useful? And how can I be more useful? And I realized that more than his, you know, economic policy or his role as a founding father, it was this notion of being useful to other people that animated Franklin's life.
He probably could have just retired and lived well at the age of 60, but he had 24 useful years after that, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, golfing in Florida was beckoning to him. It was calling. Yeah. And he said no. And he kept going. And look, all these studies today show that, you know, people who retire and do nothing don't live very long. Your life needs to be filled with meaning. And Franklin, until the very end, his life was filled with meaning and purpose and usefulness.
And he traveled a lot to do that. This is a travel show, and Ben Franklin arguably was the most well-traveled American of his day. You calculated what? He crossed the Atlantic 8 times and logged 42,000 miles?
That's a lot of miles. That would be a lot of miles today. That was a lot of miles back then. He traveled up and down the Eastern Seaboard as Postmaster General in the colonies. He lived in London for 17 years, France for 8 years. He visited Scotland, Ireland, the Netherlands, Germany. He got around, and you think about, you know, imagine a month at sea and you don't know if you're going to make it. You know, his wife, Deborah, would not travel across the Atlantic for good reason. It was dangerous. There were storms and shipwrecks and pirates. So you had to really want to travel back then, and he did.
Whoa, and he did it 8 times. You know, when I think about the commitment and the courage to go between America and Europe back then as a very important person. He was arguably the most famous American and the most famous American in Europe during those days, wasn't he?
In the latter part of his life. So he really achieved fame with his electrical experiments when he was in his early 40s. And he was hugely, hugely popular in Europe, especially in France. They loved him in France, and Franklin loved them.
So what did they think about when they saw Ben Franklin? Was he like this Wild West man, or was he a sophisticate?
Yeah, they saw him as sort of this like backwoodsman's philosopher. You know, he didn't wear a wig in Paris in 1776 when he moved there. And this was a great scandal because everyone wore a wig. But he just wore this fur cap, Martin fur cap, which he had picked up on an expedition to Canada. Wow. And they saw him as this, today we'd call him crunchy, this crunchy philosopher. He was
and
so
it was
simple.
Probably charming to the French, I would think.
Yes, he was wise and congenial and funny, and he liked what they liked. He liked wine, he liked good company, he liked music. He knew enough in France that if you're going to seduce the French, and it was a great seduction, right? The American Continental Army needed French support. Ed Franklin was the perfect person to dispatch to France for this mission because he understood them. He understood you don't conduct business over breakfast, as John Adams would have it. You do it over dinner with a bottle or five of wine.
And that was quite consequential just for the future of the United States of America.
I would argue that there would be no United States of America if it were not for Ben Franklin's great seduction of France in the late 1770s.
Author Eric Weiner is known for his bestsellers, The Geography of Bliss, The Geography of Genius, and The Socrates Express. He's with us today on Travel with Rick Steves to talk about what he discovered about Benjamin Franklin and writes about in his latest book, Ben and Me, In Search of a Founder's Formula for a Long and Useful Life. Now, when he traveled, I mean, we know he went as the ambassador to France for what, like 8 or 9 years?
Right, right.
He also traveled to other places. What are some episodes from those travels that were impactful for him and can be inspiring for us?
At age 70, in 1776, he's back in Philadelphia before he goes to France, and he's dispatched by the Congress at the time to Montreal. This was an overland journey. He's 70 years old. He's suffering from gout and kidney stones and a bunch of ailments, and they go by carriage. They go by boat. It's March, but it's freezing cold. It was a tremendous failure. He was trying to get the Canadians to join the American cause, and it was duty first. He said, never question an assignment. And that really impressed me. Not many people know that he spent all of 2 weeks in Montreal, but he did. That's one example. Another is in London when he's representing Pennsylvania and a number of colonies, how he had this sort of innate diplomatic ability to win people over. He would, his sort of bête noire was John Adams, who was over in Europe at about the same times. And Adams was a real bulldog. You know, he was just in your face and very aggressive. And Franklin was the exact opposite. He was the consummate negotiator. He was calm. He was in no rush. And he knew that the relationship was more important than the problem.
And was this in his early years or his later years?
This is his later years.
You know, it just occurred to me, today we've got a big discussion about Biden and his age, you know. What parallels can we draw from that?
It's a really good question. I've been thinking a lot about this. So Franklin, it turns out, was the exact age, almost to the month, 81, when he attended the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787 as the oldest delegate, almost the exact age to the month as Biden will be when the November election comes around. And ageism is nothing new, Rick. It existed back then, and he's old enough to be the grandfather of most of the other delegates. They were like, well, you know, he's great, but who is this guy now? But they listened to him. You know, he actually brought a lot of wisdom to the convention. He helped craft a compromise, which led to the House and the Senate between among the states, proportional representation in the House and 2 senators per state, which we still have today. You know, I'm not going to say he was every day, you know, in the weeds negotiating, but he brought this sagacity to it.
Sagacity, that's a good word.
Sagacity.
Sageness, you mean?
Yeah. And people listened to that wisdom. And he was even, his voice was too hoarse to deliver his speeches. He had a friend deliver them, but the words were powerful and they made a difference.
Eric, this is so fun talking about Ben Franklin. He's such a fascinating, intriguing, and the more you know about him, more inspirational character, and so American. When you think about the fraught times that he lived and worked in, and you think about today when we're so divided and our politics are so challenged and our government to a lot of people just seems so broken, how can Franklin inspire us to be Americans together? And what would Franklin recommend as we deal with our challenges today?
One thing I discovered researching this book is that divided America is nothing new. Back in Franklin's time, you were very much so either a Virginian or a Pennsylvanian or a Massachusetts, you were that first and foremost before you were an American. So the divisions were even deeper in a way. But one thing that Franklin brings to the table is the power of doubt. Mm. He was a tremendous doubter. And I think this came from his scientific background, his electrical experiments, because the scientific method is always this perennial process of reaching conclusions and then discarding those conclusions based on new evidence. And that's what Franklin excelled at. And he brought that to the political world. That's the thing. He didn't just keep it to science. He brought it to politics.
How did Franklin change his mind on issues of importance in
the
day?
Well, the big one is slavery, I think. Well, there's lots of big ones, but one is slavery, that he had enslaved people, seven throughout his life, approximately, far fewer than Jefferson or Washington, but still. But by the time he was in his 70s and 80s, he had essentially freed these slaves and become a very vocal abolitionist. And I find that inspiring, that he was able to change his mind about a huge issue like that.
Such a respected man who had it all. Everybody thought he probably was so wise, and he actually reassessed that. Also, he started out as a loyalist, loyal to the crown, right?
Yeah, he was a proud subject of the British Empire. He was 69 years old when he had that change of heart while living in London, representing many of the colonies, where he just got fed up and realized that they were never going to come around to the colony's demands. And I mean, think about that. At age 69, he became a rebel. Huh. And he had far more to lose and far less to gain by becoming a rebel than any of these other young firebrands like Samuel Adams at the time.
Oh, yeah. You know, earlier in our discussion, Eric, you said he was so American. What is so American?
Well, it's everything we think of as, I would say, the best qualities of an American today. Friendly and funny and warm and willing to do anything to overcome obstacles and not setting limits on what is achievable. Hmm. A poor son of a candle maker, 2 years of formal education, and he is granted honorary doctorates from Oxford University, becomes an international celebrity. It is the rags-to-riches story.
And an optimist.
An optimist, and I would describe him as a possibilian, someone who saw possibilities.
You know, Eric, I've always enjoyed Ben Franklin on the $100 bill. And apparently you do too, because you put him on the cover of your book. But there's one fun little change on the cover of your book.
Yes.
What
he
is
winking at us. As one of his biographers, Walter Isaacson, said that Franklin is the founder who winks at us, that he could be serious, he could be having some fun with you. There's something very coy and powerful and seductive about the wink. And Franklin was a winker. He was the founding winker, I would say.
Eric Weiner, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your book, Ben and Me, and learning from the wisdom of the founding father that winks at us.
A pleasure, as always, Rick.
We have links to Eric Weiner's prior appearances with us on The Geography of Bliss and The Geography of Genius. You can listen from links that we've posted with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Next, let's get some ideas for exploring our own country and our next-door neighbors. Where have you been traveling lately, not so far from home? We're at 877-333-RICK. By email, it's radio@ricksteves.com.